The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
We have just seen our worst foreign policy disaster in America's history. And if we look at the facts on the ground in Afghanistan, we have to say the American military really just surrendered to the Taliban. It was a spectacle seen by the entire world, and they were watching it intently all of the time. Now, this is not a political bias. This message I'm going to give you today, it transcends politics. And I'll show you that as we go along. But this was a massive defeat, and even the media admits that. All of the media, just about. And our allies are condemning us as they never, ever have before. And even our own people don't trust our own military to protect us. Hundreds of Americans were left in Afghanistan, and that scene is going to be playing out for a long, long time, I'm sure. And we also left thousands of Afghanistan allies who've been fighting with us in this war for many years. And we left them behind as well when we told them we would take them along with us. Certainly indicated that anyhow. But it is an event that is going to mar our history for, well, perhaps for the rest of time.
Little preview there of the upcoming Key of David program. I believe that'll play next weekend, but it was just recorded yesterday. My father was in the studio recording on some of the events that we've been talking about a fair bit on this program, and giving an excellent summarization of just the momentous impact of this on all the world. And it is important, as he said, for us to rise above the politics of it all and to understand what is playing out, as I was saying the other day, with respect to Bible prophecy. You think about Herbert Armstrong and my father and a lot of trumpet writers along the way that have said or pointed to those statements from Herbert Armstrong back in the 1950s, that America has won its last war. What a humiliating defeat in so many different respects, as we'll look at on today's show. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining our growing audience online. Of course, we broadcast through CRN Digital Talk Radio Network. That's Channel 3 on their platform. And then to get to the video-only version of this live presentation, you go to our website, thetrumpet.com. You can get the banner alert every day when the program's about to start. Or you can go to thetrumpet.com/live and get right to the live stream page, together with all of the podcasts that we post generally a couple of hours after the show is finished. Well, lots to get to on today's program if I have time at the tail end. I want to focus again, like I did yesterday, on education, because so many of the so-called experts, the scientists, the leaders, the politicians, so many of the leading figures in our nations, calling the shots, making the decisions, so many of them are highly educated and yet making, in a lot of cases, catastrophic decisions. It really is something to behold. Well, here you are, a few days on from America's humiliating defeat, and you've still got hundreds of Americans stranded. You've got thousands of translators, Afghans, that we promised we would get them out. They were working with us. They were fighting with us. One of them was involved in a rescue mission to get Joe Biden back in 2008. This helicopter had to land not that far from where these Taliban radicals were situated. Bad weather, the helicopter has to land, and they sent out a crew to rescue Joe Biden. And it included one Afghan interpreter. And he's now stranded. He's hiding out with his family of six. Four children. He and his wife have four children. And they are terrified. Trying to get out. As are thousands of others. The airport there in Kabul shut down, except for a plane coming from Qatar yesterday. I think that's where those Taliban generals were planning the overthrow of Kabul. You know, the ones that Barack Obama handed over. He gave them their top leadership. And here comes a plane from Qatar yesterday. Who's on that plane, I wonder? Pretty amazing events. It's all happening so fast. The Taliban, they're carrying out. I mentioned the fake funerals yesterday as they were mocking the United States with these coffins draped in U.S. flags and British flags. And then they're throwing military parades. You know, the ones with all the weapons we left behind, the ones that said, it was John Kirby yesterday, remember? He said that there's kind of an element, maybe a component of lethality to these weapons, but really, they're not going to be used. They certainly pose no threat to the United States or even the neighbors of Afghanistan. And here you have all these reports where Iran has already helped itself to some of the hardware. China, Russia, those embassies, they're open for business in Kabul. And we've got no one there except for hostages. That's it. And amid all of this tragedy, these disasters, the incompetence, really, an attack. Amid all of this, you've got Joe Biden and all of his friends in government. They're actually taking a victory lap. They're actually congratulating themselves. They're actually telling the world about how wonderful this is. Listen to this montage from the last 3 days, clip 11.
More than 123,000 people have been safely flown out of Afghanistan. This has been a massive military, diplomatic, and humanitarian undertaking.
Extraordinary success of this mission.
I think it's important to remember, again, 120,000 people made it out of the airport.
Now, we have just concluded the largest air evacuation of civilians in American history. It was heroic. It was historic.
This is the way the mission was designed.
It has been an enormous achievement, not just by the U.S. military, but also by the militaries of our allies and partners, and of course, by our teammates at the State Department.
Now some say, and couldn't this have been done in a more orderly manner? I respectfully disagree.
Now, in hindsight, is there one thing that you wish that you or the Pentagon could have done differently?
I will tell you that we will do what we always do, and that is to look at ourselves and do after-action reviews.
The bottom line is there is no evacuation from the end of a war that you can run without the kinds of complexities, challenges, and threats we faced. None.
You've heard some of those statements before, but the hubris of these people, the arrogance of these leaders. And then if they are pressed by a journalist saying, is there anything to learn from this? Were there any mistakes made? And then they just push it down. They kick the can down the road. Well, now we'll get into an internal investigation and consider that. But right now, this is heroic. This is historic. This is extraordinary what we've done. Joel Hilliker had a trumpet brief that went out just last night. Of all the plagues in today's world, one of the greatest is the arrogance of our leaders. You can see it in their handling of the coronavirus pandemic, in America's disastrous evacuation of Afghanistan, in crisis after crisis, despite making major and even fatal errors. Our leaders simply will not acknowledge their mistakes. They just won't acknowledge anything wrong with what they've done. Now, those that say we could have done this a little differently, I disagree. There's no other way we could have done this. We had to leave $90 billion of military hardware in the hands of the terrorists. We had to do it. We just had to. We had to leave Bagram Airfield in the dark of night on July 2nd. We had to do it, even with thousands and thousands of allies and hundreds, thousands of Americans in and around Kabul. We have to get rid of our air cover first. Then the military, they've got to go soon after. Leave the hardware into the hands of the Taliban. Shut down the airfield, the one that you can protect, the one with the mini runways, the longer runways. Get the army out, and then we'll bring the army back in to conduct the evacuation process in the Kabul airport. But as the Taliban barrel down on Kabul, just step aside and give it over to them. Give them the city. Let them control the checkpoints. The checkpoints through which the suicide bomber came through just 7 days ago. Blew up 13 Americans, 180 Afghanis. Nothing to learn from all this? No mistakes made? That's what you're hearing from our leaders. And as my father said in that opening, even the media, these traitors in the media, these propagandists in the media, even they see this as a defeat. They know Americans are being stranded. They know that Americans are terrified. Listen to Martha Raddatz as she just summarizes this string of errors, one after another after another. Clip 7.
Just on July 8th, the president was saying there's going to be no circumstance where you see people being lifted off the roof of an embassy of the United States from Afghanistan. They were clinging to airplanes in those early days. He was touting the Afghan forces, saying, I trust the capacity of the Afghan military. The president said they were ready, they were prepared for this, but no one was prepared for 11 days for the Taliban to take over. President also promising on July 8th that we can guarantee the safety of the interpreters. There are thousands of interpreters in Afghanistan right now who are desperate and frightened. And just about a month ago, he told our George Stephanopoulos that he would get all Americans out. They've gotten 90% of those out. And that 10% right now is scared and still does not know exactly how they're going to get out.
That's a left-wing reporter right there. This is from the National Interest. It says, in Kabul, America's capability to conduct an orderly withdrawal from Afghanistan had turned into a disgusting nightmare of incompetence that can only be rectified by holding those responsible accountable. But see, that's part of the problem, too. They're not held to account. They get up. They hide behind the ordinary soldiers. Look, what they did was heroic, and I'm sure a lot of what they did do was heroic. A lot of them also had to turn Americans away because of decisions from higher up. No, gates are closed. Gates were wide open on the day that they knew the suicide bomber was coming. And the gates were closed shut a day before the deadline. They had to get out a day early to try to please the Taliban. They couldn't even extend it 24 hours. And you have Americans waving American passports, banging on the gates, shouting at soldiers, and soldiers saying, no, the order from on high. General Milley says that's it. There's no more evacuations. No more planes going out for just ordinary Americans. Sorry. It says here, a midnight abandonment of America's most important airbase in Bagram on July 2nd. Had put a double hex on a proper retrograde from the country, first by giving up a large-scale aviation platform whose massive runways and extensive outer perimeter made it eminently usable and defendable, and second by allowing the Taliban to release thousands of rabid terrorists who had been imprisoned there and were now on the loose. See, we not only left the airfield, we left the prison. Thousands of prisoners, hardened terrorists, killers, murderers. And the Taliban comes along, a lot of them ISIS-K, okay, let's play along. The Taliban come along and open up the gates for ISIS to just come flowing out of the prison. Yeah, bitter enemies, aren't they? It says, in Kabul, American military units were largely forbidden to leave the airport to rescue and escort Americans and allied Afghans back to the airport. An agreement was reached where the conquering Taliban controlled the checkpoints outside. To make matters impossibly worse, American officials in Kabul were reported to have been given or were reported to have given the names and locations of some of our citizens and close allies to the Taliban, supposedly for the purpose of expediting their efforts to leave the country, but in reality, simplifying the Taliban search for the very people whose lives depended on escaping from their clutches in the first place. It's just one paragraph in an excellent article at National Interest. Listen now to NBC's Adia Abawi as she talks about the abandoned Americans in Afghanistan. Clip 8.
It's not good, Andrea, from the people on the ground. I'm hearing men crying on the phone, females crying on the phone. One woman had her house sprayed with bullets by the Taliban because she was a female lawyer and her father was a colonel who died 2 months ago. And they're all terrified. Right now, the only hope that they have is that someone's still talking to them. And I can't tell them what's going on because we don't really know. And I don't think the administration knows either. What we know from the Taliban is they know that they've won. They know that they have the upper hand.
They're all terrified, she says, about these hostages. The Taliban, they know they've won. They know they have the upper hand. And the ones stranded, the ones trapped, they're hiding and hoping someone comes to help them. That's what Joe Biden said he would do a few weeks ago. In his speech the other day, he, remember, blamed the Americans for not getting out earlier. We were warning you as early as March. We sent out as many as 19 warnings. We were telling you how dangerous it was. Even as we were going on TV and telling everyone else how safe it was, how strong the Afghan army was, how that this was going to be orderly. How that this was going to be really a piece of cake. Easy. The Wall Street Journal had an article explaining the miserable existence now for these Afghans that helped the United States war effort. The article is titled, "Majority of Interpreters, Other U.S. Visa Applicants Were Left Behind in Afghanistan." The ones that had the special visas to get out, the majority of the interpreters, they didn't even get out. I mean, it makes you wonder, and some are asking this question, who actually was evacuated? And were they vetted if they weren't the interpreters? It's like Tucker Carlson said last night, if these were all just interpreters that were helping us, how come they can't speak English? They're supposed to know both languages. But the United States government now, as they scatter out these refugees across the United States, mostly in swing states, that's another topic we might come to later. But as they scatter out potential voters, potential Democrats, they're hoping, they're looking for translators because they don't know any English. This is, if you look at the playbook as it's being played out on the southern border, it's just another line of attack coming from an Antiochus administration. Another way to hurt the United States of America. And it doesn't matter if there's, it does not matter if there's collateral damage. Lose a few thousand translators in Afghanistan to the Taliban monsters? Not a problem. Even your own Americans? Well, as long as it's just 10%. 10% stranded. The Wall Street Journal is wondering, okay, if we didn't get out the interpreters, if we didn't get out the translators, what happened here? It says here, in the early days of the evacuation effort, thousands of Afghans crowded Kabul's airport seeking a way to flee the country. Some made it through without paperwork, while American citizens and visa applicants were unable to enter. What? While visa applicants and American citizens were unable? The U.S. still doesn't have reliable data on who was evacuated, nor for what type of visas they may qualify, the official said. But initial assessments suggested most visa applicants didn't make it through the crush at the airport. I would say it's the majority of them, the official said. Here's another leaker. says, is you wonder how many people, though, are paying attention. It says, just based on anecdotal information about the populations we were able to support, over 20,000 Afghans who had applied for the special immigrant visa program remained in Afghanistan when Kabul fell to the Taliban on August 15th, according to advocacy groups and congressional officials. 20,000. And so who did they get out? Well, a lot of refugees that just wanted to take advantage. There is a crush on the airport. Keep in mind, Biden said there's just no other way we could have done this. I mean, it's perfect. We knew it was going to be complex. I mean, come on. But it was exact. We were prepared for the crush. We were prepared for the suicide bomb, except that we weren't. We were prepared for all the chaos. Listen to Tucker Carlson last night as he talks about all of these tens of thousands of refugees that were not vetted. They didn't even have a visa. This is clip 10.
So if you've gone online recently and visited the official website of the State Department run by Mr. Tony Blinken, you'd have found a list of what they call welcoming communities. These are places where Afghan refugees, in particular special immigration visa holders, will be settling in the United States. And if you look at that list long enough, you may notice something, especially if you cover politics. You may notice that these communities include an awful lot of swing districts and swing states all over the United States.
And he takes you right through examples in Virginia, in Texas. There's, and you've seen other tweets, I'm sure. You'll notice that some of these left-wing hotspots, Martha's Vineyard, you know, some of the suburbs around Washington, D.C., they're not sending them there. They're not sending them to Manhattan. They're sending them out to areas that are in, for the most part, states that are a little bit closer as far as whether they vote red or blue. Tucker, as I say, had a whole segment on that last night. So these people make their way out. A good chunk of them, now they scattered around to different nations as well, but a good chunk of them, I don't know the exact figure, they end up in the United States of America. And yet the Afghan interpreter that was part of the rescue mission in 2008 to save Joe Biden, of all people. He's now begging for Joe Biden to save him, but to no avail. He's hiding out with his wife and his four children. The Wall Street Journal quotes him as saying, "Hello, Mr. President." This is his message for Joe Biden. "Save me and my family. Don't forget me here." And he went on to tell the Wall Street Journal that he can't leave his house because he's too scared to go outside. He's one of the many that we've left behind. Just the News had an interview with Michael Yon. He's a former Special Forces soldier and was helping evacuate people in Kabul. And he's getting all of these text messages from soldiers that were there. I mean, they've got to be careful. They've got to do it anonymously. Because if you speak out like that one lieutenant colonel, you're going to be fired. Milley's not going to be fired. Lloyd Austin's not going to be fired. Blinken, he's fine. Joe Biden, for now, he's fine. Kamala, she's gone missing, but her job's secure. Okay, they all can do and say whatever they want. They can leave a trail of disastrous outcomes, an abomination of desolation in their wake. And they'll still carry on popping the champagne bottles, I guess. This was heroic, what we did. So says Lloyd Austin. So Michael Yon's getting all these text messages from soldiers that were there on the front lines helping to evacuate people. He's interviewed by Just the News, John Solomon. And it says here, they're quoting him. They're quoting Yon, who's quoting from a text, I think, that he got. He said, we are bleeping abandoning American citizens. We are abandoning American citizens. This is what they were saying Sunday and Monday, just a few days ago. It says, an Army colonel assigned to the 82nd Airborne Division wrote Sunday in frustration, in a series of encrypted messages that detailed the failed effort to extricate a group of American citizens hours before the last U.S. soldiers departed Afghanistan. And so he gives details about these Americans who made it to the airport. They made it past the Taliban, which is miraculous in and of itself. They got to the gates of the airport, and the soldiers had to tell them, "We've been ordered from higher up. That's it. There's no more evacuation flights going out." This is in Just the News. Jan told Just the News that a group of Americans were abandoned at the Kabul airport pleading for help as military officials told them they were finished with evacuations. They were pleading. Joe Biden made it sound like the other day that of these 100 or 200 that are left, that they kind of want to get out. I guess they're a little bit torn. That's the way he made it sound. Here it says, Michael Jan says they were pleading. They were begging. It says, "We had them out there waving their passports, screaming, 'I'm American,'" Jan said Tuesday while appearing on the John Solomon Reports podcast. The heart-wrenching scenes unfolded this weekend as the U.S. military prepared to exit the capital city on Monday, leaving both the airport and most of the country under Taliban control. "People were turned away from the gate by our own army." I mean, this is criminal. This is traitorous. If the army isn't there to protect its citizenry, what purpose is the army serving? They couldn't even extend it to the official Taliban deadline date, August 31. They had to get out on August 30 and then wave goodbye to these Americans, pleading with them. What was it that Joe Biden said just a couple weeks ago, clip 12?
"If there's American citizens left, we're going to stay till we get them all out."
Wow. Another broken promise. Just like Martha Raddatz listed off all of these promises. What's that other reporter? I think we skipped over one. This is CNN's Dozier talking about the Taliban and now all the promises that the Taliban is breaking. You see, Joe Biden, he can break his promises with the American people. The Taliban, of course, they're going to break their promises to Joe Biden. That's fine. But Joe Biden will keep his promises to the Taliban. This is the United States Today. Play clip 9.
"My phone is blowing up with people reporting incidents of one person who was a government worker just told me that his house has been ransacked. They stole his car. They beat him up. They all knew he worked for the past government. So much for the promise of amnesty. And a group of international aid workers who got turned away from the border in Tajikistan, three of the women were pulled off the bus by the Taliban and threatened with whipping because they didn't have a male escort. So I just don't see what the leverage is."
Yeah, for us, that is. We don't have any leverage. The Taliban know they have the upper hand. And so they're doing what the Taliban do well. Persecuting people, killing people, beating people up, taking their cars, stealing, ransacking places. Listen to John Solomon last night on Fox News talking about these Marines, these soldiers, that are now sending out messages saying, "Yes, we left Americans behind, Americans that were pleading with us to get out." This is clip 6.
"There's a scene unfolding Saturday and Sunday while the spinsters at the Pentagon, the State Department, and the White House are saying any American who wants to come home is going to be able to come home. And meanwhile, there are Americans waving their passports. They got through the Taliban checkpoints. They're at the gate that the U.S. military controls. They're waving their passports. We are Americans. Let us in. And they were turned away. I've talked to soldiers that have talked to their friends on the front lines. The soldiers wanted to turn the key on that gate and let Americans in. The State Department and their command chain would not allow them in."
The command chain wouldn't allow it. That's, as we've been saying for the last 2-3 weeks, that's an attack from Antiochus. This is an attack from Obama. He revealed his hands 7 years ago when he let those Taliban generals go free for a U.S. deserter. And remember the clip we played the other day? Obama gets up in front of the cameras and says, "Hey, it's an American. This is in our DNA. that we don't leave one, not even one American behind. Not even if he's a traitor. I mean, we're going to go after him. We'll release all of the Taliban out of jail if we have to. That's what he did. He empowered the Taliban. He takes in this deserter. He comes up with the excuse of, well, we've got to make sure that we go after every single American. And now it's the same Obama who's left all of these Americans, Americans that aren't traitors, Americans who want to get back, Americans who made it to the airport, Americans who are waving their passports, Americans who are pleading with American soldiers. And the military chiefs in the United States, the State Department, the command chain, they say, nope, sorry, we got to get out even a day early. Even a day early. Mr. Hilliker wrote in this Trumpet brief, these leaders are creating a wasteful, dangerous, unjust, corrupt mess, yet in the face of clear evidence, they carry on undeterred. This is arrogance on an epic scale. I mean, that's the arrogant side of this story. There's also just the outright attack, the audacious attack. The way, in some ways, what they see themselves doing, they do think it's a success. They're not just getting up and saying that to the cameras. This is all part of the plan. Empower this terrorist state. Empower a new terrorist super state. You know, sleep with the enemy and crush your own people if you have to in the process. And then try to get up and just conceal all of this evil. Well, for most of this attack, they've had the press, they've had the media, the propaganda media, right on their side. But even they can see there's a great, great injustice, a disaster, a tragedy. Just the News says, one man wrote how he spoke to the American mother and sent photos of her family's passports to Americans inside the airport. The Americans recognized it's her and agree, but I've been told General Milley won't let them in, the man texted. General Milley just wouldn't let it happen. He's at the top there at the Pentagon. He's the Joint Chiefs chairman, yeah, studying white rage. He won't let him in. He will not let him in. Ultimately, the family did not get into the airport. We get them to the gate, and the U.S. Army completely fails this, saying, oh, we can't do it because the Department of State tells us that we can't do it. That's what these witnesses are telling Just the News. This should be in every newspaper across the United States. And people should be on trial right now for these criminal acts, this traitorous behavior, to just turn and walk away. Even the New York Times confirmed some of these accounts of American citizens not being allowed into the airport. The New York Times! The Times article is titled, Stranded in Kabul, a U.S. resident runs out of options. And it explains in the article how he was not allowed into the airport. Yet still, you've got people in the Biden administration. Ross Wilson, he was one of the top U.S. diplomats in Afghanistan. He said this on Twitter recently. Claims that American citizens have been turned away or denied access by embassy staff or U.S. forces are false. End of story. End of discussion. All these claims. How about if we get the Americans out of there and see what they say? Maybe they have something to say about that. How about if we get the hundreds of Americans back on American soil and then they go on 60 Minutes or some of these shows and they give their side? Here you've got this diplomat. I mean, he's dwelling safely in somewhere in Washington, D.C., I'm sure. Tweeting out, there's no truth to those claims. It's maddening, really. It's important, like my father said there at the top, to step back, take a deep breath, and look at the bigger picture here. It's easy as an American. Boy, you can see why 60% of Americans want him impeached. And he's getting up there giving a victory lap, leading the way. Lloyd Austin is right behind him. Prophecy, though, is being fulfilled. Listen to my father, again, from yesterday's recording of the Key of David that'll play next weekend, clip two.
And overnight, America has created one of the most well-funded, heavenly-armed terrorist nations in the world. They're going to be far more dangerous than they ever were in the past. And look what has happened after 20 years. There is a spiritual dimension to this that we don't understand, and we need to understand it. If you look at Leviticus 26 and verse 19, it says when Israel reached the zenith of their power, that God says, I will break the pride of your power. You will have all kinds of power, but you won't have the courage and the pride to use it. And the honor, you won't have it. The greatest power ever, but they're afraid to use that power. And it's all going to lead directly into the return of Jesus Christ as King of Kings. That's what is going to happen.
We got into that earlier this week as well, these dire prophecies culminating in the return of Christ to this earth. But at the start of that clip there, he talks about America creating one of the best funded, heavily armed terrorist nations in the world. You know, we talk a lot about Iran being the number one state sponsor of terrorism. I don't think in all of its history, going back to 79, 1980, I don't think in all of its history as an Islamic state has it given $90 billion of military equipment, of machine guns, of bombs and planes and tanks to the forces of terror. And here the United States did that in just a matter of weeks. You got the comparison the other day from Victor Davis Hanson. It's more than what we've given Israel over the past 70 years. Can this really be happening? Can the United States of America be the number one state sponsor of terror? I mean, we've just given the Taliban all of the equipment that it needs to terrorize the world, to terrorize neighboring nations. My father went on to say, skip ahead to clip four.
What's happening in Afghanistan is just the beginning of terrific problems in this world, not just America and Britain. We're going to be entering into the day of the Lord shortly. And that's, well, at least the conclusion is very good news. Afghanistan is only the beginning of sorrows, but great things are about to come to us as well.
That's something to think about, particularly as we head into the Feast of Trumpets. That's next Tuesday. And, of course, that points to the return of Jesus Christ to this earth and the day of the Lord right before that, my father mentions, the Great Tribulation. It's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. But how we ought to be praying, Thy kingdom come, God's kingdom, God's will be done. It does, as he said there, it does culminate in the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. And finally, righteous government. Government that's for the people, for government administering laws that are there for our own good, so that we'll be blessed, so that we can have peace, so that we can be happy, so that we can be unified, so that we can all ultimately become members of God's family. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. You can send us an email if you want to give us some feedback. That's td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Every particle of human suffering Unhappiness, misery, and death has come solely from the transgression of God's immutable law. Obedience to God's law liberates us from all unhappiness, pain, and suffering. It frees us from captivity, from spiritual slavery. Obeying God's commandments guarantees a life overflowing with joyful abundance. For much more on this subject, request a free copy of The Ten Commandments. When you make your request, don't forget to enroll in the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. This 36-lesson course is a distance learning program that will help you to get to know your Bible. Each month, you will receive a lesson that guides you in discovering the answers to life's most important questions, all from your own Bible. Your enrollment has already been paid for. Enroll today. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Every year in our Principles of Living class, one of our freshman Bible classes, we read through a significant portion of Professor Alan Bloom's book from 1987, I think it was, the late Professor Alan Bloom, The Closing of the American Mind. And he, you know, he's writing there toward the end of his career as a professor and just commenting on how different it was going back to the 1950s or 40s. He said he started noticing some pretty dramatic differences in students, 18-year-olds, coming into the university sphere around the 1960s. They came in, the sexual revolution was unfolding at the time. America was in a mad rush to consume media and television and radio and became less and less interested in books. He noticed all this. And as you can tell by the title of his book, we were becoming shallower, more narrow-minded. The liberal arts education was becoming a lost art in so many ways. We also go through an article every year in Principles here in the first semester. It was written back in 1981. The title of it is The Trouble with Harvard. And this is an article written by Timothy Foote. I'm not sure whatever came of him or if he's still alive. But anyway, he graduated from Harvard in the 1950s. And then wrote about some of the dramatic changes that he had observed, that he had heard about, that he had read about, that he had studied into. He's writing his article in 1981, as I say. I'll get to it in a second. Let me just preface it first by a statement Mr. Armstrong, Herbert Armstrong, made in The Missing Dimension in Sex. He said, in the feverish development of knowledge production, scholars and universities have been placing emphasis on academic freedom. Academic freedom is defined as the independent judgment allowed teachers, scholars, scientists, students in the pursuit of knowledge. So they pride themselves. Oh, yeah, you've got the academic freedom to go along. In fact, they just go along with the crowd. They really don't learn how to think independently. They really don't know how to prove the truth. So much lies, so much propaganda. In any event, they deceive themselves. Yeah, we've got a free and open society here, and really that just means in terms of human behavior. Anything goes, any old lifestyle. This is from The Trouble with Harvard, as I say, Timothy Foote. He said, many students drift through Harvard with a nagging sense of failure and anxiety. There's so much freedom here, says Kiyo Morimoto. There's just so much freedom. Well, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? And what kind of freedom are you talking about? Is it the kind of freedom that the devil sells us on? That's actually captivity, slave, being a slave to our lusts and addictions. He says here, there's so much freedom here that studies become extracurricular. Well, I thought you're going to the university to study, to learn. It says, and you can't get through if your studies are extracurricular. You don't have to go to class because nobody took attendance, and you could get unlimited extensions on papers during the term. It says further on, Morimoto is worried about Harvard's objections to using authority all up and down the line. It's not insisting that students get papers in on time, not insisting on formal meetings between students and advisors, students and tutors, even between students and faculty. Harvard, it says, Harvard is deeply ambiguous about authority. It's deeply ambiguous about, of all things, authority, about being firm and clear and unambiguous. Today, all authority is seen as negative. Now, the reason I think it's good to go back and look at what has happened, Mr. Armstrong was way ahead of his time, talking about this swing to the new morality. And he said the old morality was of the devil as well. That sense of shame, that prudish, you know, thinking when it comes to marriage and family and sex. But boy, as you swing over to the new morality, as I said recently, it's like leaping from the frying pan into the fire. Now it's just anything goes. Well, there's no authority. There's no real boundaries. And as I say, the reason this is important to look at, we got into it some yesterday, is this is the environment that so many of our leaders have emerged out of. I mean, we're in 2021. When Mr. Armstrong, I was telling the students the other day, when Mr. Armstrong wrote The Missing Dimension in Sex in 1981, he talked about the average 30-year-old at that time and not really understanding or appreciating what happened before the sexual revolution, before the pendulum swing over to the new morality. And then he said, for those of you that are over 30, well, you really don't appreciate just how fast and dramatic these changes have happened in just a few short years. The young ones, they didn't see what went before. And the older ones, they really don't see just how dangerous this is. Well, he was talking about 30-year-olds in 1981. Today, those 30-year-olds are 70. Today, some of those 65, 70-year-olds, they're heading up top positions over at the Pentagon, at the State Department, in the White House. Joe Biden himself, he's 79, I believe. And look at what his family's gotten involved in. The media, of course, when they were desperate to defeat Donald Trump, they covered it all up. The drug addiction, the prostitutes, all of the being unfaithful to wives. They cover all that up, all the filth. In fact, they glamorize it. Hunter came out with his book, and what was it Stelter said? I was just moved by it, or whatever he said. He was moved by the page after page after page recounting all the addiction, all the sexual promiscuity, pretty much everything that just destroys family, destroys society, destroys individuals. But see, he, like the Biden family and like so many other leaders, they're products of the modern educational system. They go into places like Harvard. Keep in mind, this is Timothy Foote writing about Harvard. Harvard is the elite university in the United States. I mean, it's right up there with Stanford and maybe a few others in the Ivy League. This is Harvard. And you go there, and what's this one student say? Yeah, there's just so much freedom. I mean, and the deadlines don't matter, and they're ambiguous about authority. Any authority is viewed as negative. Foote says that Harvard students are turned loose in a system practically without discipline or order or viable requirements or supervision or even advice. So I was telling our students this morning, thank God that they're not turned loose in a system like this, like what's described in this article, this old article, by the way, when they come to God's college. Now, when they come to God's college, sometimes they can run into troubles if they're not willing to obey the rules, if they're not going to be as disciplined as they should be, and that's addressed. Whether it's here on campus or if someone needs to go home and sort out some of those problems before they come back. And some of them do, and we welcome that. God is a merciful God. God will forgive if we turn to him in repentance and faith. But there needs to be repentance. There needs to be change. And there certainly needs to be, there needs to be requirements. There needs to be order and discipline. There needs to be supervision. There needs to be advice, counsel, direction. Harvard, it speaks of Harvard as being right at the forefront of the monumental and sweeping changes that happened in the university and all across the country back in the 1960s. Harvard was right out front with respect to the sexual revolution. It says here about Harvard, in 1981, keep in mind, on any given night, the odds are against finding anyone in his or her own bed. Few people seem to disagree, says Foote. By the standards of the age, there's nothing wrong in that either, except that it tends to produce large amounts of emotional exhaustion, domestic squalor, and sheer noise. That's right, just bouncing around from one bed to the next, bringing the party spirit into the Harvard environment. It makes it really difficult for others even that are trying to get an education. The domestic squalor, all of these heartbreaks, these broken relationships. And of course, he's writing at a time, really, this is before the hookup culture. I mean, it was a promiscuous time and society says that's normal now. We've come through a sexual revolution after all. Free sex, no consequences. And now we're in the hookup age. Now you just get together for a sexual encounter and you don't even have to know the person. You think that's bringing happiness and joy to our young people? Is that strengthening the foundation of our society? That would be the family. It's destroying the family. And our society is unraveling because of it. And this is why you've got Isaiah 3 being fulfilled. This is why we're being led by children. This is why there's more and more. There's just no adult in the room. It's just a bunch of arrogant children who are not, they are not about to admit that they did anything wrong. I mean, they can be heavy-handed themselves. If they see a little peon get out of line, I mean, they can really crack down hard. But they're not about to step forward and consider themselves. Harvard of 1981, what must it be like in 2021? And as I was saying this morning to the freshman class, what a blessing God's college is. This college, Armstrong College, it is the college of the future. It's just a tiny little speck on the earth right now. Just a few students. So blessed, though, so privileged to be here. But this institution, this educational institution, and someone was asking me by email, by the way, if we had a correspondence course, and we do. You can get to the Bible correspondence course on our website, thetrumpet.com, but that really is a lot of the education, the foundational education that our students are getting here. So you can, even if you're older, even if you're of old age, you can get to that AC training, that AC instruction. But what a blessing God's college is, and soon, not that long. We don't have to wait that much longer. But there's going to be Armstrong colleges or Ambassador colleges, whatever God's going to see fit to name them. They're going to be all over this earth. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to call our operators for the correspondence course, the number is 1-866-930-3024. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.